From multiple Gameful locations in Minneapolis or near enough, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development. I'm Ellen Burns Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Martha Croy. I too make nice games.
In this episode, we talk with Alan Rust, creative director at The Game Agency, to discuss Gameful UX, team workflow, and building lightweight assets for browser games. And so, if everyone is ready, let's start. Welcome, Alan.
Hey, it's good to be here.
You and I have known each other for a while, and we talk about this stuff anyway, so we might as well record it and and have other people share in your wisdom.
Oh, you're too kind. I don't know about wisdom, but it's definitely, I think people say, that guy won't shut up about this stuff. So, yeah.
That it makes for a good podcast.
Yeah, it is what we like to hear. Yeah.
Right. So be ready for one question and an hour of talking.
Perfect. Yep. That's what we're used to anyway.
Yeah, choose carefully.
So Alan, we can talk a little bit about your background, but just to kind of kick things off, you and I met because you and I worked in the same building for a while when I worked for Alan Interactions, and you are like the core of the Twin Cities arm of the game agency.
Right, the one and only person in the company in the Twin Cities.
Yes, it sounded cooler when I called it the core, I will say.
Yeah, the core. Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, when COVID came along, it might have shook everybody else's world, but I was already just a satellite sitting in a box talking on, you know, every conceivable call video chat you could think of already. And it was, I hadn't done a lot of that beforehand too. So it was very new to me. That was my COVID like 3 years ago. That little boot camp of, okay, is this going to work? This kind of sucks. But now I like it because, you know, I'm not wearing pants.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, that was my question. So I guess.
Right.
Well, generally in the past when you and I have spoken in person, we wore pants. Things are different these days. I will not speak to my pants situation one way or the other. I'll have a Schrodinger's pants situation for the rest of the show. But we geeked out a lot. We talked a lot about I think when we really started geeking out is when you started showing me a whole bunch of things that you were doing with Adobe XD. But I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. So can you maybe talk a little bit about how you got into UX, what kind of work you do with the game agency and other cool stuff?
Yeah. My history is I'm kind of one of those people that has a very wide, just a wide swath of creative, I call them interests. I wouldn't say talents. They're interests. They've slowly turned into different careers throughout my life. But, you know, I started off actually as an actor, a musician, went to LA, lived there, went to school for that. Then really realized that film was what I wanted to do. I went back to film school, did that, came back here to the Midwest and started touring with the Blenders, which my brother is also a part of. We've been together for 30 years, just recording albums, touring, that kind of thing. And what's funny is because we were touring around, I had so much free time. You know, you're just basically doing gigs at night. And so my days were really about self-teaching design, because I've always been a graphic designer. I wouldn't call myself an artist. Just even in art class, I was always a graphic type person. And slowly throughout the years, just kind of developed a client base on my own. I was a freelancer for many years. And then after we kind of stopped being a full-time touring group, I went and worked in mostly marketing and advertising, doing a lot of ads, doing a lot of that kind of stuff, art directing, photo shoots, that kind of thing. And then slowly, I'm old. That's why like it's taking so long to get to the UX part, because UX didn't exist. So then eventually, you know, websites were getting designed by marketing companies. We were actually taking them on. And that's kind of my foray, slow but sure foray into UX design. And that's kind of where I live and breathe. And it kind of cascades into just about anything, actually, because since I still do a lot of video shoots and animation and things that aren't necessarily UX based, I approach them that way because everything has to be storyboarded. Everything has to be thought through with the end user in mind. And so even if it's not proper, UX design, websites, games, platforms, portals, all that stuff, that type of design thinking goes into everything that I do. Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned being old because we were just making fun of Steven for his back pain, which is a horrible thing to say and do.
I'm the youngest member of the clubhouse, and yeah, my back hurts today. So I don't know how long.
Mark and I were like,
we're really enjoying it. Is what's going on.
Oh, your back hurts, huh? Oh, that's too bad for you.
Wow.
Oh, it must be rough.
Yeah.
Must be rough.
Well, I respond a lot to your multidisciplinary background because I've also had a storied background in, you know, film and design and music and various things. And I feel similarly, like it really informs what I do now. And it took a long time to get there for me. And like your story, it's like it only makes sense because of all the stuff you did along the way. That's what I'm hearing from you anyway.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I wonder if you feel this way. When each time I made a move to a different, you know, obviously all these interests were there, you know, bubbling up. But when you make a move to an actual career throughout, you know, like, oh, I'm gonna leave acting and I'm gonna go be filmmaker. I'm gonna be a filmmaker. I have to go back to school. Great. No one's gonna like that. that just every time you switch gears, you feel like, at least I went through this. I felt like, oh boy, you're screwing your momentum up. People are passing you by. All that kind of thing goes through your head. You're like, gosh, you're just gonna be another jack of all trades and not really settle in on anything. That's what I felt for years, but I slowly realized, you know, if you stick with that wide swath, mm-hmm. that they do build upon each other, and it's like building a little pyramid, and you can stand on top of it and go, oh wow, you know, like when I parse out being a creative director now too, which is like I haven't been a creative director for that long, that many years, and it's knowing what it takes to do all of everyone's jobs is really important because you know, well, number one, for budgeting, you're like, well, I know how many hours that actually takes. So let's negotiate, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But also just for giving direction, it's just, I can speak everybody's language. You know, I can talk with a developer and we're speaking the same language. I can talk to an artist or an illustrator or a, you know, a camera operator or, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it just, mm-hmm. It's really handy. It's come in really, really handy. And so now I don't feel so bad for switching around so much.
I do feel sort of similarly. I think you never stop wondering if you had stuck with something a little bit longer. You'd have like, oh, I wouldn't have gotten this next step or this next step. But where would I have been if I stuck with that first step? But I know when I was working in advertising, project managers loved me because you have a more holistic sense of like the whole picture. And you have a better appreciation. I wonder if you feel this way. You have a better appreciation of the stuff you don't know. You can mm-hmm. you can better imagine yourself in a position you've never had because of all the ones you have had, and it gives you kind of this professional empathy that gives you kind of a shortcut when you're starting something new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. That's definitely true. I find that, you know, I wouldn't say I'm the greatest at filtering through new hires. Mm. I, you know, maybe that's just because I haven't been the creative director for a decade yet. You know, it's just like I've only been doing it now for close to 5 years, you know, where you're kind of more about managing people. And I really, that's not what I'm about. I'm not about managing people. Mm-hmm. I'm about managing projects and getting excited about the elements within them. The problem is when you are kind of a, you know, a catch-all, you're a generalist. And I love the word generalist now, whereas before I thought it was kind of a, oh, that sounds weak. Now I love it. It's like, no, I'm a generalist. It's like whenever, because if I can't find somebody to fill the gap, that's like, oh, I need a, you know, another XD guy or, you know, somebody doing UX and I need an animator or I need somebody to go shoot this thing or do the voiceover for that. It's like, if the we get to the end of the wire and I haven't found the right person, it's like, well, I'm just going to do it. And you just do it, you know?
You see this as a positive? So is that what I'm hearing?
It can be. It can be. I think, you know, so what I, what my, the biggest thing, the biggest hurdle I've had to learn is what I just said, which is that's the ideal, is that you, oh, you can champion, come to the, be the, whatever, the hero at the end of the day when you don't have somebody or somebody drops out and you're like, well, I got it. I'll just do it. Mm-hmm. That's great. But before that, I was just doing too much. And that's dangerous, right. Really dangerous. So if you're capable of doing a lot of things and you want to, you just like, oh, I just want to do that too. Cause like, oh, that's so cool. I don't want to hand that over. you know, so that's the thing you got to learn to do as a creative director is like, okay, your job is to find good people to do good things. And, you know, and if you are a doer, you know, if you're still a doer, you know, you throw your hat in the ring when you have to. And that's, you know, that's what I'm still learning is like, don't throw your hat in the ring so soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. I think everyone here understands what you're talking about, actually, Alan.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, Stephen, for jobs.
I wanted the experience. So I applied for everything. I've narrowed the jobs down. I think I have one job at this point.
He thinks. He thinks, dear listener.
I'm not sure. I got.
He's going to have to get back to you.
Yeah.
Well, one job and the podcasting side gig, and you did just ship a game, so then right, you got yeah, rid okay. of that second side gig.
Yeah, I forget. Nice Games Club kind of counts as a job, sort of. So that
kind of does.
It's two. It's two.
Join our Patreon, anyway.
Yeah.
So one thing I would say that is great. That I would love to do someday to take advantage of that do all, do everything is to do one of those like 24 hour, like make a game, like, you know, just literally throw something to those marathons where you, mm-hmm. I don't know what they are. I've never done them. I mean, I'm new to the game industry, you know, like, and our company does e-learning training, you know, so most of our games are geared toward training and e-learning. That kind of stuff. And we do have a platform of set games that you can just bring your content to and just plug it in and you're off to the races. Right. Mm-hmm. But, so that's not to say that I wouldn't like want to do that sometime. Just like, okay, we've got whatever it is. You have 24 hours mm-hmm. to build a game. And like, yeah, I'll take five of those jobs.
Yeah.
Well, take five of the jobs.
When I was
you
doing
the other three or four,
back when
you
I was
just
doing,
finished one.
Yeah, yeah. Ellen and actually. I just finished one. It was a 72-hour game jam, so not quite as oppressive. I know you may have done this when you were doing film stuff, but I used to do these 24-hour film festivals where you make a thing in a day, and there are 24-hour game jams, but they're they're brutal. Like you want a 2 or 3 day game jam at the minimum, but you don't want much more than that because then you can start to like. Your scope can go like 3 days is really nice. And Ellen and I just did one.
Nice. Yeah,
we did. And we already sowed the seeds of planning for the next one. So we will maybe add you to the loop. If you're interested. But that's like an entire second episode.
My six kids won't let it happen, probably, but you never know.
We'll make them join it.
I mean, they've got friends. Exactly. They can do a weekend sleepover, right? It's-
yeah. Take care of yourself, kids.
Just make a couple of sandwiches, leave them on the counter, and, and come back on Monday.
Your DoorDash gift card.
Yeah.
That's why you have six of them, right? So they can watch each other. That's how I thought the system
was. They're all pretty old. They take care of themselves already. So.
Well, I want to come back just to give listeners some context and also to give more information to Stephen and to Mark, who haven't, I don't think, looked a lot at the things that the game agency does, but... like you mentioned, the game agency does like training games, and you mentioned you do sort of e-learning things, but you guys do a ton of different, like a range of different things. You guys have been doing, you know, training games that are kind of built as one-offs. You have the platform, the Training Arcade, which is like an authoring tool as well, but you also do lots of builds for like company conferences and things like that, where you're building custom games for, you know, big organizations that are bringing people in for some kind of specialty event. So can you talk a little bit more about what kind of games you guys make and for whom and what your development cycle looks like, big picture, just to kind of lay some context?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously we do custom work and that's all well and good, but you know, that is expensive for a lot of companies to, you know, it's one thing to build even a learning course. You know, a learning course can take a lot of design back and forth with the client, and you're like, wow, what did we build with all that money? Like, not much. You know what I mean? I've done some of those. This is not even gaming, and you're like, why does this take so long and cost so much? You know, and then now loop in the gamified part of that about it, and you're just exploding it, right? When it comes to custom builds. So while we do that, we do have a platform that allow, right now it has, I'm going to misquote it now, 8 or 9 game, let's call them game mechanics. Okay. And they're, you know, a lot of them are things you've seen. There's like the jump game. A lot of these are very mobile friendly because they're supposed to be kind of a more casual way to approach learning. Like, hey, when you can jump in here, you know, and have some fun along the way. Games are obviously a way to engage and keep them more, you know, coming back to and learning something a second time is always hard when it's a boring course. But when it's a game, it's like, okay, well, yeah, that was kind of fun. I kind of had fun, you know, and I learned something, sure, you know. But the platform allows you to kind of pick a mechanic, like say a jump game or like a there's stuff like these match games where you match tiles and stuff. And some of them are kind of like social like that, like where it's just a little bit of fun and then you pepper in the information or the questions. So it's kind of like a back and forth, and which is really good for your mind because your mind is constantly switching from this kind of reward, fun part of your brain. And then you're going into a cognitive skill of answering a question that's about work. You're like, what? And it's weird, but it actually that not only makes it a little easier to swallow, but it also impregnates that information in your brain differently because you're activating it differently. When I look, you know, I've done a lot of courses just with clients that we have. I have to, like, you know, you have to sit through some of their security stuff or whatever, and you're like, none of this is getting in my head because I just want it over, right? You just like click, 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 click. Did I get 80%? No. Oh, crap. You know, and I got to go back, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea, the core idea of the game, adding gamified, you know, play is to kind of break that chain of boredom and also just activate your mind differently. And it really does work. Anyway, so we have like these different mechanics that you can pick from. And what's great about it is that you're not building out a whole new thing. You have the ability to reskin it. That's a slight custom build, but you can add some your brand colors, obviously, and that's kind of out of the box. But let's say you wanted to kind of reskin it and have it, you know, kind of represent your brand a little bit differently. You can do that. And it's a really low lift, and it's also a lot cheaper. And so it's subscription based, and they can put their employees on here, have them play a bunch of stuff, and all you have to do is bring your content. I need to teach them this. Okay, type it in. The game takes care of it, and you're off to the races. We also have, on top of that, we have I wouldn't call it an LMS, but it's like a game. What would you call it? Like a game portal, or basically what it does is if you've got a bunch of our games out there, and you can post them all different ways, right? You could be just linked and not like even connected to your LMS, or you could.
Learning management system.
Oh yeah. Learning management system.
Thank you. Thank you.
Exactly. Learning management system, similar to a CMS, except it's all just learning analytics of how people did and that kind of stuff. We have something that's called the arcade that lets you, or arcades, plural, that kind of pulls all those games into one place. So you can see how as a player, because obviously the back end, the people who are trying to teach you all this stuff, they can see how you're doing. They can see how the whole company is doing. But we wanted to put something that was forward facing, allowed players to actually see and we call them players as opposed to learners. We want to make it fun. Yeah. So it's like we bring all these players together so you can see how each other are doing, and then you can challenge each other to different things, and that just makes it, and you get rewards and all these kind of fun things. And it's not as boring as, say, a company's LMS is, which is all you do is kind of see your how you're doing, and you get notifications of how you're doing. And
yeah,
this is more about challenging each other and seeing how each other is doing. So that's kind of a new thing we put out there. But the latest and greatest fun that we've brought to the table is we've actually acquired some IP from Sony. So we now have a couple of game builds that is official, I'm doing air quotes, official Jeopardy, which you've probably seen Jeopardy all over the place. Schools do it a lot, and mm-hmm. people are doing versions in PowerPoint to teach people and that sort of stuff. Well, we have the official thing. The bells and whistles are there. We have all the fun audio. We did all of our own voiceover for it using their actual announcer from the game or from the show, and it mimics the show as best as possible. And we're doing that. We just are now releasing Wheel of Fortune as well. And I was a little skeptical about Wheel of Fortune, to tell you the truth. I'm like, okay, you're spinning, you're getting points, or you're getting money. And then we're putting it. I wasn't so sure about it. I thought it would be kind of flat, but it is probably the most exciting one we built because there's so many bells and whistles in there. You got all the audio cues. And again, we went back to the show and we had the announcer do all of the cues, so like he's like, you know, that's a good spin, and all that great stuff that makes a game cool, you know, is people interacting with you and talking and saying, hey, that's good job, oh, that letter's up there, and he's doing all this fun stuff. And you know, that kind of takes us into the audio topic of how much audio blew that game it's wall to wall sound. I mean, it's like the music, the spinning of the wheel, the lights, or like the when the letters pop up, everything has a sound. Yeah. What you would expect in a game, right? You yeah. want like that kind of stuff, and it is the most fun learning game I could think of. I didn't think it would, but I think it's the audio that really just blew it out.
I'm really fascinated by how you're describing this, because it sounds a lot very similar to the work that some of my company has done. We have our own like web we have like a web browser collective of games and stuff too, but we use them for more economic purposes.
Very gently put.
Yeah, that's the nice charitable way of saying it. Mm-hmm. But I really like how you're describing all those things, because like I think that like all of those features that we put on our games to make more money is also motivation to, you know, help other people be motivated to learn and to play these games, to get better at the games and learn about the things that the company's trying to teach them. And so I think that like that is that's like a fascinating avenue into that. And you're like even using like, I guess kind of like fancy casino flashy techniques to get people to engage with learning in a way that you know, a boring talk would not, you know, get them to engage in the way if they're not interested in the topic. I think that's really good.
It's all engagement by a thousand names, right? Like just the mm-hmm. using the language of games, the framework of it, the presentation I think it's tempting to say like spoonful of sugar, right? Makes medicine go down, because that's a little dismissive, in fact. But it's the game design of it, really, that it's not separate from the content wholly, and it's not a trick exactly, but it is just an alternate way to present it, which is really interesting. I'm really curious about, cause I mean, I've played Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune games on like NES, like the licensed versions of the home game. Right. They're not all great. Like, it's kind of hard to take a game show and make a video game on it. Like, that's its own challenge.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to add a wrinkle into that, because the other thing that's the other key thing that makes this game build valuable is the fact that the content is fluid, right? So with mm-hmm. the platform that you've described, Alan, subscribers go in and they can enter their own questions and they can change their own content. So the assets you've created and the game design itself has to work with content that is TBD, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
right. It will mess your mind up. what you have to think ahead on with these, especially companies will have content that isn't well written. You know, it's like, well, you need to be a little more concise with your questions or your, you know, like just for an example, we have to account for the potential of having, you know, like say in a Wheel of Fortune, they usually have a category, right? And it's usually a one word thing or a two word thing. Well, they're going to probably put a phrase in, like a paragraph of text in there. Mm-hmm. And we have to build for that. We have to, I mean, granted, at some point you have to cut them off and say, well, you get like, you know, 250 characters. Then that's overkill. But
yeah, don't make me pull out these ellipses. Like,
exactly. They will be there. So you have to kind of account for this endless potential of content that's going to go into the game. And then there's languages, which is already going to be a little bit painful, you know, especially for certain games. I mean, Wheel of Fortune especially is one of those where, like, how can we build the board to be working, you know, in Japanese? I don't really think we can. There's certain games that just aren't going to work in every language.
Mm-hmm. So to kind of circle back to Mark's question just now, Alan, can you kind of describe the process that you used to kind of start prototyping how this would work? And you could use Jeopardy as an example, because I think we're already on the topic, but like, I'm assuming it's kind of going to echo the process that you've shown me in the past where you're starting to do wireframes and prototyping in XD. And I was hoping you could talk a little bit about how that you might've iterated on that to get to a point where the Jeopardy build, for instance, or the Wheel of Fortune build, for instance, ended up being good in contrast to some of the games that Mark may have experienced that you weren't so good versions of it. How did you get there? How did you make it good?
That's a good question. Well, one of the things that makes it good is that you just try to make it as much like the show as you can. Like doing intro, like, you know, and you have to keep these things light, of course, because this is web-based stuff. You know, something as simple as you kicking off the show, we have a theme song and let's show, you know, like Sony would have their hand in there, like wanting certain things, like you got to show the set. And I'm like, but it's a game. It's like, I can't play, we can't play this game on the set. So how I allowed that to work was just in the intro, we did like this pan and scan across the set where you'd see where the players were. You could see where the, you know, where what's his name? Alex Trebek would be standing.
You mean LeVar Burton?
Oh, yes. That's right. I mean, nobody's on set. It's just an empty set. But like, and you might have a car in the background, which you could win. And then there's the board itself, right? And this shiny black floor that goes on forever and all the great lights. And it's like, hey, that is a cool visual. We do want to use that, but we're not going to like play a video of that. So what we did was we took a giant panoramic shot of it and just panned and scanned it, right? Using JavaScript. So we just like scanned across it and it was timed with the music and wet it, wipe it, you're done. You know, like there's your set. We got it. Now let's focus on the board because there, that's its own problem too, because the board, depending on your content, has to grow. So like, it's not going to be a standard board. It's going to have to be a board that could, you know, be, you know, 4x5. It could be 6x, you know, like there has to have all that flexibility to grow and like, oh, we're only going to have three topics, you know, or three categories. Or so we allowed for a certain flexibility. And Ellen, you worked on this with me. That was kind of a, you know, a pain too, to kind of like think about that. But I was already wanting to get us out of some of our past games that were kind of baked into a kind of an aspect ratio. And I said, we got to make this responsive. Let's allow this to scale for viewport. And it was a little harder because of, you know, because of the, you know, the staticness of the board itself. But I think we achieved that. And there were certain other things that I really wanted to get a handle on. And that had to do with the text as well. A lot of Jeopardy's stuff is all center aligned text. Well, when you put corporate content in there and it's like, okay, now we're getting to 3 lines worth of content, you know, and it's center aligned. You don't want to look at content that way. Mm-hmm. And of course you would have some dangling, you know, one word at the end, you know, that kind of thing. So we found a piece of JavaScript that would allow us to do auto, you know, like say, if you're a designer and you've ever worked in InDesign, there's a way to just balance the paragraph, you know, it's like, it's a piece of code that just balances the paragraph. So you don't have these ragged sides or mm-hmm. you don't have one word at the very end of your paragraph. So we did stuff like that using JavaScript that would like suck it all up and kind of make it a nice tight, like basically make it look like each piece of text that would appear, they were these clues, if you will, not answer, or are they answers? What are they? I can't remember. Jeopardy, you got to go backwards on everything.
Oh yeah, so deep cut.
Yeah, deep cut there. On that one. But you know, each piece of content that would come up, this, you know, text looked like somebody curated it, somebody designed it, and made sure that it was nice and tight. And that's, you know, using little pieces of code to kind of help you keep the thing looking tight, because it really could fall off the rails so easily with this you know, like you say, DVD content, you know, it's coming up. Who knows what this is going to be? And that's the real challenge. I think it's much more challenging than the design of itself, because, you know, these games already exist. We're trying to mimic them as close as possible. So we're actually getting resources from Sony. We're getting their sound effects. We're getting their music. We're getting, you know, granted, Jeopardy doesn't have music during the play. So we had to go license some music, I think I created some music for some of it, and then we license some just during the play to keep that energy up, right? Because that show, if you've ever watched it, it's really great to fall asleep to. It's a lot of silent stage sound.
Guess what, y'all?
What?
Yeah, you're supposed to guess. That's the point. That's why.
Oh,
flamingos.
22. 97.
Okay, all right. I realize this was a mistake. I should have done this. We've got a T-shirt.
Ooh,
what?
You can buy Nice Games That Club the logo on a T-shirt. It looks so slick. This was made by Mark, and it's beautiful. I love it so. It's soft, and it makes a great gift. You can get all of the friends that you know. This T-shirt, you should do that.
You can
cool T-shirt.
It's a T-shirt you can wear.
It's a T-shirt you can wear,
and it comes in different sizes.
It comes in different men's sizes. And women's sizes. I believe it also comes in child sizes. I'll have to check on that. That's available for you. It's a really nice, high quality shirt for you. It's not going to be one of those like kind of starchy shirts that like you'd never want to wear. You know, even though you support the thing, this is one of those things that you're going to want to like. I mean, wear to a wedding.
Yes.
Oh.
That's my guarantee. Yes.
This is what I'll be in when I get married.
Write it down.
No.
If you're it's on the internet, Stephen. It lives forever.
That's what I get. If you're interested in purchasing the shirt, and why wouldn't you be? You can visit nicegames.club/shirt to purchase.
What was that again, Stephen?
Nicegames.club/shirt.
Sorry, one more time. I wasn't listening at all.
nicegames.club/shirt.
It really says shirt. The URL really is shirt.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's so fascinating that there's a bunch of different criteria that your design has to meet. It has to meet like just what you're describing, aesthetic criteria. It has to look like it was handmade, but it also has to, or hand laid out anyway, but it also has to meet the criteria of being an empty bucket. It has to hold any content you put in it. I mean, within some constraints, I imagine. But it also has to have normal UX experience for for this type of like a learning game. But that is in conflict with the other demand, which is that it needs to feel like Jeopardy. And on top of all of that, you set up the constraint that it has to be responsive, and all of that needs to adapt to various styles. The thing about those are all achievable goals independently, but as you describe them, I can feel them all pulling at each other in a way that is different from other projects that are either, like white label e-learning products or a Jeopardy adaptation or this particular content and how to best present it in the cleanest way to its intended audience. Those are challenges that are hard enough on their own, but you have to do them all at once. I don't know. I find that really like an exciting challenge. Was there any part of it that, I mean, I imagine there was a lot of heads banging against walls along the way, but did the uniqueness of it, was it more appreciation and more frustration having all of these demands on it?
I think for Jeopardy, there was more frustration for me because I didn't have enough time for it. We were under constraints and we had to bang it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's very stressful. I think the thing that the good thing is we developed a good rapport with Sony. I've worked with Sony because I worked with a company that does film and television distribution, and I know how long it can take to get something approved. Mm-hmm. And we had to approve a lot of stuff, and this went much faster, and I was glad for that. Of course, there was two factors to it, because Sony, you know, there's the production company that actually, created Jeopardy. And then you've got Sony who owns the license to it and owns the property. So you've got a lot of people to talk to, a lot of things to clear, but we were able to walk them through some of the challenges of this being a learning tool. This is not straight up the game itself. We need ways to make this a learning experience. Jeopardy, as it is, the game itself is an assessment tool. Really, it's like, what do you already know? It's a test. Mm-hmm. So how do you make it a learning experience? And so we have these interstitials and things that allow content builders, instructional designers who are creating these courses and plugging them into the game, they can pick all these different ways to inform you along the way. And it breaks the game up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the ebb and flow of what games coupled to training is all about. It's about, it's each thing is getting broken up a little bit. And that's good. I think Wheel of Fortune was just so much. It's so funny because I didn't see it as a learning game. But if you look at I wasn't familiar with the game aside from just watching it blindly, as a kid it's been around forever now, right? It does have elements that can be about learning, and there is because some people want to use a game for assessment. They actually, that's a great use of a game. And they're, if you have people going and reading something or watching a video, and now we're going to play a game as opposed to testing you. So a lot of times games are used as that and that alone. And one of the things I was thinking is like, well, you do all this spinning and you're building up how much money you have, and then you're slowly solving a puzzle, right? And I didn't realize that there's other parts to the game. There is the toss up, which is like they're just filling the board for you, and is if you can answer really quickly. And so there are elements of, there's three different types of rounds in Wheel of Fortune, and The toss-up round is a great, like, that's how we kind of sell. It's like, hey, if you want to assess people, use the toss-up rounds, you know? Mm-hmm. You could build, and you can build a game, and we got approval to do this by, through Sony. We can allow the instructional designers to pick any round they want, and they can put them in order if they want. If they want to do just a set of toss-ups, and like, we're just going to test you, and it's going to be a really quick game because that goes really fast. You can do that, or you can pepper it in. You can have regular play later in the game. So they have all this flexibility on top of interstitials that are more informative. So if you want to, like, in the middle of the game, I want you to watch this short little video about our company, or I want you to read this little paragraph, or whatever, they're allowed to do that. They're allowed to break it up any way they want. And that can be pretty hard to build, yeah. actually. And yeah. in the back end where they're designing their game, one of the things we really wanted to do is, like, can we get out of the drop down fields and if you've ever been inside just a CMS or an LMS or whatever, mm-hmm. you're just like, I want to see the damn game, you know? And so we built the back end to look like the puzzle board, and you're filling in the puzzle as you want to see it. You can edit it as you want. And it's as fun. It's kind of as fun as playing, you know, it's like, yeah. I have all this content. I'm going to start typing it in. And we allow them to kind of like do more boilerplate content where it's like, okay, these are all the words or these are all the phrases I want. I don't even know how I'm building this game. And we allowed for them to do that. Whereas before, a lot of times people would have these spreadsheets of things and then they'd slowly type it in and then they might go, oh, this should go before that. And now there's this one step forward, two steps back kind of thing. We wanted to allow them to just put your content in there and now figure out how to build the game and do it visually. So it's actually kind of fun to build too. And so I think that'll be a big hit once that's out.
That's exciting. Yeah. So, Alan, just to kind of recap for people who maybe haven't done this kind of work before, basically, people are going to be using the platform to design an instance of the game, to build an instance of the game with the content. And so you're talking right. about, like, not just the UX of the game itself, but also the UX of the backend, which mm-hmm. I'm bringing up again to make the point that these things, both the backend and the game itself, have to run on, you know, internet connections that may vary widely in quality and consistency. And yes. corporate machines, which are potatoes often. So what are some of the things that you make, that you know, decisions and things that you do as the creative director and then also as a UX designer to make sure that these things can run on potatoes?
Right. Compression. that's where, you know, having come through from the music industry and understanding, you know, I especially audio and the film industry. I mean, all of these things, like we talked about, this pyramid you're building of skill sets, is that there's an understanding. I don't have to farm this out and go find a third party to like figure it out. It's like, God, we have all this stuff, all these videos, or we have all this music, wall to wall triggering of music throughout this thing. Can you go figure it out? Like, no, I know how to figure that out, you know, and some of our developers do too. And we're just it's nice that you understand how to make stuff super, super, super light. And at the same time, you're like, you're just on the cusp of like deterioration on some things, you know, it's like, okay, that's not going to fly. That's garbage. But I think that's the goal, is to constantly tweak like that. And when we do that a lot with everything, it's whether it's images, like right now, one of the last things we're dealing with as we are on the cusp of rolling out Wheel of Fortune is we use, for all of our animations, we use Lotties. If anybody's ever heard of that, that's a protocol that was developed by the developers at Airbnb. And now it's being pushed out as a public, an awesome, you know, thing that anyone can just use. And they also have a great website called LottieFiles.com that allows you to throw your JSON files up and see how they look. You don't have to build something to run them. And you can, I use it all the time to like, here's our little bit of animation of such and such. And I just send somebody a link off of LottieFiles.com. They can see it. They can, there's a QR code. They can just grab it and see it on their phone, which we've been doing a lot of testing. And we've found that Safari on iOS is just really chunking out on Lottie's. And not so happy about that. So we're trying to troubleshoot that right now. And that's one of the things I'm dealing with right now is that we have these cool title treatments that are very, like the game, but they really didn't have these assets for the different rounds that I was talking about. There's three different rounds as well as the title itself. And we need that whiz bang, animation to happen. And, yeah. The problem is the art itself to look like the show, it's kind of like, it's not vector art. And that's what Lotties are. They're designed to be vector art. Mm-hmm. And, I could certainly emulate some of this stuff as vector, but it starts to get complicated really quick. And after a while, you're like, oh, I might as well just be a low grade PNG, which Lotties do support. You can have a PNG in there. That's fine. So it's just kind of like that kind of thing. Like, how small can I get this before it just turns into garbage? And, and that same thing goes with the audio. We do a lot of tweaking with the audio, and we use Howler as, I don't know if you guys have heard of that, but that is how we kind of rein in all the issues that, web-based audio has, especially across devices. You're talking about, especially mobile devices and that sort of thing. Apple has a lot of issues about, auto triggering of audio. So right, Howler right. is how we kind of rein in everything, because especially with this new game with Wheel of Fortune, I mean, we are triggering audio constantly. There's a voiceover going every like 5 seconds, it seems like, and there's clicks, there's bops, there's music, there's all that stuff. Another thing that comes into play that we used Howler for was I wanted to do adaptive music. I wanted to be able to, as you move into, again, Jeopardy does not have music in it normally. So we licensed this material, and which was great because some of the music that we got approved came as stems. And stems are, for those who don't know in the listening, stems are basically, you've got a recorded piece and the producer has broken out, like, give me just the keys, give me just the horns, give me just the drums, and you have all these stems, if you will, and you can then mix and match what you need. And that's, of course, what all games would use. If you're doing adaptive music, you're going to take a piece of music and it's going to swell here, like you entered a new room, let's say, or you entered, you're in melee of some sort with, all of a sudden the music isn't going to all of a sudden, cut to a different, piece. Yeah. It's going to, slowly swell into this cool battle feel that just seamlessly, it's like somebody, some orchestra is watching you, right? I'm preaching to the choir now. Everybody already knows what I'm talking about, but I wanted to bring, this stuff that, you guys get to use all the time, and you use most likely middleware to do that. I was like, well, how can we do that? We're on the web. We can't use some cool middleware that makes it super easy and awesome. So Howler was a way to do that. And what I did was I built out, I don't know how many stems I had of the music, but basically it was the same piece of music. And depending on where you are in the game, we would, add in drums here. It's like, okay, now you're in the solving part. All of a sudden, the drums kick in. And it's not as dramatic of a change that you would get in a console game or something where you're you're fighting people and you've got all this, tons of music.
Well, I was just thinking, even in console games, having those multiple streams of music in sync, rising and falling, that even on something like a high-end PC or a console is really hard to do well. So just like, as you describe it, I'm like, oh man. And on the web, oh boy, like,
yeah,
right.
So Howler is it's like a JavaScript framework. Is that your middleware essentially?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Mm. Exactly. And I they had already been using it for other things. So it wasn't something I brought to the table. So I'm not really that in depth about its capabilities. So I just said, how do you want to approach this? Do you want me to give you different mixes? Do you want me to, how are we going to solve this? And we tried different ways. What we landed on was, we're just going to play these streams, from the get-go. Boom, mm-hmm. Clack, everything's playing, right? Let's say you got five streams of music and they're just all playing. And all you're doing is control. And that helps on things like iOS and stuff, where you can't midstream start triggering stuff that isn't user-defined, right? The user didn't do anything. So how are you triggering audio? You're going to have problems on different devices. So we just started the game, on load, everything goes. And you're basically just muting everything. So you're muting the things that you're not using. And then instead of just unmuting, you're, voluming up, right? And so the piece will change. As it's kind of like a producer sitting at his console, just using the faders. Okay, here we are, add that. And we figure out how many milliseconds is too abrupt or too long, to make that impact, right? So
in the hamster, the crew of hamsters that's running the internet, there's now one that's in front of a soundboard.
Totally.
I like how you're describing all of these tools and things, because I think there's a lot of work that goes into this to make these games work for all of these clients that you have. And I think I was a bit curious as to how much input you have on what the client can put in the stuff. I know that you described that you there are a lot of limiters in there. You can't have a thing more than 250 characters in a box or whatever. In the grids in Jeopardy, 4x3 or however, they probably want it to. I'm sure there are some clients that want it to be 7x10, and that's ridiculous.
Right.
Can you go into detail about how much input that you have for clients to help them make a product that would best serve the people they're trying to teach?
Well, that's an interesting thing too. So a lot of these games we're building without a client attached. Right. So you're thinking, mm-hmm. We definitely think about our client base, people we've worked with, people that we will reach out and say, hey, we've got this coming out, and we might pick a few people's brains on things. But a lot of it we know because, we do a lot of pharmaceutical, and it's just imagine that in Wheel of Fortune, where you're solving a puzzle and you've got there's 17 Z's in this
Zulogazoni D. That's not an actual drug. I made that up.
It's not.
Maybe
not.
It is. I don't know.
You don't know. Sounds like homeopathy to me. I don't know.
Lots of woo.
But that's the thing. We got to think about all of these potentials. Right. And it's so much different than doing a custom game where you know what you're building for.
Yeah.
And I'm retrofitting a piece right now that was for these COPD doctors, right? Mm-hmm. And the content is really cool. It's these illustrators made these illustrated characters, and they have speech bubbles coming up, and it's very comic book style, right? Really cool look. But because it was built for a very specific use, you can't really reuse it. And none of us on the team that are building, it's a branching dialogue game. So I don't even know if you can call this a game, but it's basically, depending on your answer, you're branching yourself through the conversation. And then of course you're getting rated on how well you're managing this patient, right? This is a doctor-patient conversation. And there was four scenarios already done years ago, and how they solved it, because again, this is web-based, was instead of video, they used animated SVGs, right? And but there wasn't any audio. That wasn't part of the spec. So you've got four of these scenarios that are like, it's just them talking and it's cool because it looks like a comic book. So you're loving the look and feel of it, but it has no energy. And you're just clicking continue, 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 because you can only have a couple of speech bubbles up because people are having to read these, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm done reading. Okay, continue. So you're just hitting this continue button forever until you get to the questions. Whereas now they said, well, can we add the voiceover to these? Because we want, you know, and that was a big ball of wax because we didn't have working files. So I had to kind of do a shoehorn scenario where we captured the SVGs, made them video, synced them to audio. But now we're kind of able to bridge the gap of these conversations. So you, instead of like continue, 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 you can just kind of listen to it. And of course, read it if you're going to read it.
Yeah.
But the idea is that, you know, this, we have a fifth one that we're building now, and now we get to take it from beginning to end. So we're illustrating, animating, and adding the voiceover, as opposed to trying to add voiceover to pre-existing animation. And by the way, since these were just animated SVGs, it's like, I call them the clacker face, because all they were doing is just like, they didn't have a lot of, what do you call it?
Phonemes?
Phonemes. There was like maybe like, you know, like four mouth movements for everything. So
yeah.
It was pretty horrible. So, and we were syncing, or we were trying to sync pre-existing content to audio, which was murder. It was just an editing nightmare because mm-hmm. we're talking about hundreds of clips. Okay. Whereas now we're animating and animating to the voiceover, like proper stuff, right?
Yeah.
But I brought that up. Why? Because your question was about custom, or your question was about like, you know, building for the client's needs. I guess what I'm getting at is this custom build was for a very, you know, specific need.
Right.
And you can just from what I was describing, you can see how many hours go into this.
Yeah.
And then it's a one-off. And it's like, mm-hmm. that was really expensive. And you can't use it again. And I would love to build that same thing with that amount of cool styling, but then have responsiveness, flexibility of content, and endless, you know, handful of different characters to pop in, right? And yeah. It's like, I bet we could do it for the same cost.
Well, a lot of times when you make bespoke products for a client who has feedback directly, you make only what they ask for. You don't, right?
Right?
But when you're making a product for a potential customer, which just as a you know, plain old commercial game designer, you want to make a game, put it out on PC, that you're doing that for them. You don't know who your player is.
Right.
You know, when you're working in client work, you often do. But for the projects you're describing, you kind of get to imagine a potential client or a range of clients. And it's harder because you don't know what they need. But also, you get to kind of build these systems that that are flexible, where and then you have to churn the wheel. You have to decide. You have to figure out how to make these efficient. Whereas if you're making something bespoke, it's you're not asked to flex that muscle, and just by nature, it's going to be less efficient, even though you're not spending any less time making it. Right?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I think this little. You know, having to do this work in browser on, you know, non-bespoke platform where they can put any content, that it's like a boot camp, and I feel mm-hmm. empowered by it. I really do. I feel like taking all constraints away, the magic that I feel like my brain could do when you do have bespoke, content to build, or you're building a game or something. I feel like a superhero right now a little bit, because I've been in boot camp for the last 3 years. I've been with this company doing this stuff that like no one should do. You know, it's like, you're really, oh, this is so hard. Isn't there a better way?
One and, lesson you walk away with, dear listener.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, it's opened my eyes a lot, and mm-hmm. it does require you to flex your muscles on, you know, the UX horizon, you know, as far as the end user is unknown, and that's what's wild about it. You know, usually when you're thinking like a UX designer, you know, or a creative director who's thinking about all the pieces, you know the end user, and you're trying to empathize and build for that user. And this is like so different, where it's like, this could be anybody. This could be something that fits perfectly, or something that is just shoehorned in there. How can we build for both?
Yeah.
Well, Alan, we're kind of at the end of our hour, but we have a couple more things to ask you.
Sure.
And I guess the couple more things is, you know, where can people find you on the internet if they want to learn more about the work you do, or the other types of work that you do, or the other types of work that you do?
The game agency is where I work. So the gameagency.com. Our platform is called The Training Arcade. Find that online. I'm in a group. I'm in the Blenders. Go to theblenders.com and you can see where my musical background came from. We actually, still tour just for the holidays, which is kind of fun, because every year you get to kind of like stop doing your day job and kind of go be like a get on stage and get in front of thousands of people. And that's kind of cool. And this past year, we weren't able to do that, but we instead did a Kickstarter. And it actually, like, Kickstarter, God, we've never wanted to do something like that before. But this, COVID made sense for us to dip our toe into crowdfunding, and it actually worked. I'm like, who's going to give us money to shoot video of us singing in a studio instead of appearing in concert? And it actually worked. It worked really well. And we finally got some video on us, which we have not done in years and years. So that's on YouTube. You can find the Blenders on YouTube and see all those our Christmas music that we did during COVID, and that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, nice.
Well, Alan, thanks for being on the show and for giving us all these tips and all the tools that we are going to promptly Google afterwards.
Super.
And we'll hit you up the next time we do a big game jam and see if you want to join our group.
Yeah, there you go. You know what? You can have me on again, and we can actually talk about Adobe XD, which, by the way, I will not shut up about that. I've used a lot of UX tools, and it's lighter than some, but I swear it's better in many ways. So next time we'll just geek out about that.
We're hyping it now. It'll come in the future. That's our show. Check out our website, nicegames.club, for show notes and links to resources on today's topics. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode and on our programming in general. Go to nicegames.club/feedback and tell us what you think. Remember, there's a new feedback form. It's real good. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter at nicegamesclub, where Dale tweets about game dev resources and grappling hook gameplay. Or you can email us through contact@nicegames.club. Want to support the show? There are so many ways. Give us a review on your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about your favorite episodes. Join us on Discord by visiting nicegames.club/discord. And now we're on Patreon. We've had that in the show for a while. Maybe we could just do like, and we're on Patreon.
No. It's gotta feel brand new every time. So
we're
so
not
like,
on Patreon.
Yeah, it's like, so it feels like urgent. Like,
yeah.
And now we're on Patreon.
I don't know.
So we're still on Patreon.
Still. They tried to get rid of us.
And as a patron of the show, you'll enjoy bonus content, such as Dylan's Dango diatribe, extra jokes, and more. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub.
So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.